Welcome to The Forum on 90.5 WCBE. Every week we bring you the conversations shaping Columbus, straight from the Columbus Metropolitan Club's Wednesday networking luncheons. The Forum is where leaders, thinkers, and community voices come together to tackle the issues that matter most to Central Ohio. Want to be part of the conversation? Tickets and details about upcoming forums are available at columbusmetroclub.org. This week it's all about the arts. The arts aren't just inspiring, they're infrastructure. New shared data from Central Ohio's cultural sector shows how creativity fuels workforce readiness, economic growth, and a more vibrant Columbus. This week we hear how investing in the arts is a force for transforming communities. We'll hear from Dr. Kimberly Goodman, Executive Director of Worthington's McConnell Arts Center, Angela Maleka, Chief Creative Officer with Maleka Creative Advisors, Priscilla R. Tyson, former Columbus City Council member and founder of Priscilla Tyson Consulting. She's also the namesake of the Priscilla Tyson Cultural Arts Center in downtown Columbus. Your host is Sherry Chaney Jones, co-founder and CEO of Sure Impact. Let's dive into this week's Columbus Metropolitan Club Forum, Creative Capital, How the Arts Power Community Infrastructure.
I'm so excited to be here today. Good afternoon and welcome to today's CMC Forum on Creative Capital, How the Arts Power Community Infrastructure. As Sophia said, I'm Sherry Chaney Jones, and it's my honor to moderate this conversation because it is a personal passion of mine about why arts are not just entertainment, they are essential infrastructure for thriving communities. So when we think about infrastructure, we typically think of things like roads, bridges, maybe even broadband. But what about the systems that build empathy, belongingness, creativity? These are the qualities that build our community's resilience and innovation. So this work that we want to highlight today is being led by Angela Maleka of Maleka Creative Advisors through the Collaborative Arts Impact, which is a groundbreaking effort to measure and communicate the true value of the arts. The Collaborative Arts Impact Initiative brought together 20 different institutions across Central Ohio and beyond, and they included organizations like the Columbus Museum of Art, the Wexner Center for the Arts, McConnell Arts Center, the Contemporary Theater of Ohio, OYO Dance Company, Ohio Fashion Alliance, Wild Goose Creative, Dayton Live, and many more outside of our Central Ohio region. In addition, Angela brought together key resources to support this effort. Miami University students worked as interns supporting the arts organizations. Measurement Resources Company lent their expertise to co-create the shared impact measurement framework. And Sure Impact provided the technology platform enabling shared data measurement and reporting. So in this first year pilot, we found that participants in these arts programs reported a 24% increase in empathy, strengthening trust and collaboration. They also, 65% of them, demonstrated improved 21st century job readiness skills like adaptability and teamwork. 50% also reported higher levels of creative confidence. And these are skills that employers rank as the number one soft skill for the future workforce. In addition to all that, they gave these arts organizations an 84 net promoter score, which is well above the industry average, which shows us that our cultural organizations within Central Ohio aren't just good, they're world class. So these outcomes matter even more today because the arts are under significant pressure, if you haven't been following the news. Nationally, proposed federal cuts have estimated over 50% of the National Endowment of the Arts Awards, which has created a $27 million funding gap for nonprofit arts groups. Entire programs have been canceled, and small and mid-sized organizations, which are the lifeblood of our cultural institutions and local communities, are the most affected. And at the state level, Ohio at least fought really hard to maintain support. And we, in Ohio, secured a historic high appropriation of $53 million for fiscal year 26-27, which is up from $51 million in the previous biennium. So this obviously helps offset some of those federal losses, but the demand is soaring with nearly 200 new organizations seeking sustainability grants. So as we dive into this conversation, I thrive and I invite you to consider if the arts can reduce loneliness, improve mental health, and prepare our workforce for the future, how can we afford not to invest in them? So I'd like to open up the story with you, Angela, as the driving creator behind this work. So you've been the force behind the Collaborative Arts Initiative. Why was it important for you to lead this effort? What was the biggest misconception you wanted to challenge about the arts and the role in the community's infrastructure?
Thanks, Sherry. This was a selfish endeavor. I entered arts advocacy about 12 years ago, following 25 years in journalism, politics, and government. And my work really highlighted the peak, the aha moment in the advocacy journey was during the pandemic, when the arts and creative sector was the highest unemployed sector of any. Some months we were double the unemployment of restaurants and bars, but you never heard about the arts. And in that work, I realized that when we think of the arts, what do we think about? We think about an object or a performance. We don't think about the people that are behind the arts. We don't think about the human outcomes that the arts provide. So I wanted to create or find evidence that filled the gap between the story that this sector has been conditioned to tell for decades, economic impact, which are really outputs, and shift from outputs to outcomes, what we know that the arts provide. And so this was a selfish endeavor for me to try to develop a new language, a new way that we can empower organizations to measure human outcomes in real time, like other industries do, and communicate those outcomes effectively so we can shift from the misperception that we're just entertainment or an extra, but we're foundational to the fabric of every community.
Kimberly, you, as the executive director of the McConnell Arts Center, you were a participant in the Collaborative Arts Initiative. So what did it mean for your organization to participate in this collaborative? And how has having this new set of data changed the way you tell your story to your funders, boards, and community? And can you share an example of how this data may have transformed your decision-making about a program or outreach?
Of course. We knew that the answers that we were going to get, we knew and we know that the arts change lives, they save lives, but we weren't asking the right questions until Angela came along. We were asking things like age, race, zip code. Those are important things. But we started asking questions for a person to rate from 1 to 5. I felt my stress levels decrease during the concert. That's important. I did not feel alone during the event. I don't know if anything's more than important than that. The event brought me joy. And when we could look at the answers to those questions, we could really think about the wellness aspect, that these make a difference in a person's mental and physical well-being. We know that obviously there's a connection there. So it's been great to be able to have these numbers to prove what we anecdotally already knew. And it has impacted our programming in that we have concerts at the McConnell Arts Center that we know are going to sell every year, but we like to take some chances sometimes with things that are a little more maybe controversial, a little bit more difficult, that we won't sell out. But if we have 40 people come in the building and their lives are transformed through that moment in the arts, then it was worth it.
And Priscilla, you've been a champion for arts as a civic leader and funder. So based on your experience, what role does data play in securing funding? And how does evidence of outcomes like improved mental health, job readiness, community connections strengthen the case for investment? And so if you were speaking to a group of business leaders or legislators who see arts funding as optional, what's the one story or data point you'd share to change their minds?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me today, and it's wonderful to see so many arts leaders in this community and other leaders who care so passionately about the arts. And I do care passionately about the arts, so it's a pretty easy story for me to tell. And so if I were going to speak to an elected or a business leader, I would first just really share that when I think about Angela's research, there's two ways I look at this. One, I think it still is very important to be able to share the data about who's coming to your events. That's important information. We need to know who's coming. We need to know that to understand what your programs are providing. But however, the arts is really important from an economic development standpoint. It just is. And so when you think about in Columbus that about $412 million is coming into this community, and if I think about what's coming into Central Ohio based upon not just the nonprofit organizations or the arts organizations in this area, but I think about the money that's coming in because of the creatives, the marketing, the media, there's so much money that we view as art. And so based upon that, number one, I absolutely believe that it is an economic driver, because also what it does is it brings tourism to Columbus. It also brings, it's important that we as a community value quality of life, and art is just an amazing part of the quality of life. And so what that does is it keeps young people who we want to recruit, people who are graduating from Ohio State and other places, they care about the quality of life. And wherever there's a great quality of life, they will come because they know there's also, they can find a job anywhere, but who has a good quality of life? So those things are very important in terms of what I would look at as a funder. But I'm also looking at the things that, which is interesting, I'm so happy that Angela has done this report, because those areas that we just talked about, loneliness, mental health, those areas, to have attendees attend those events and to share those comments only strengthen the work, strengthen you being able to get the funding to support your organizations.
So one thing I wanted to highlight, because I think it's very unique about what this collaborative did, and I was fortunate enough to have a front row seat to the work, and that is that the initiative used shared measurement. So the old way is most arts organizations were out there measuring different things in different ways. And this way brought all these arts organizations together to have that, as Angela mentioned, that shared sense of language. So just from, you know, the three of you, I'm curious to know what new truths or patterns are emerging now that we have this collective data, not just, you know, single arts organization's story to tell, that are looking beyond ticket sales and focusing on those human outcomes like empathy and job readiness. So is there something about the collective nature of the work that's more powerful than the individual?
Well, I think they need each other. And again, my work began because, again, the pandemic and representing the sector and having to fight for funding for the sector, I didn't go into legislative offices and say, I'm here to talk about the arts. How could I do that when we've got food insecurities or housing insecurities, other struggles that are going on, right? But what I did know without data, but I knew that you can't be innovative if you're not creative. So what I do is I'm always approaching through somebody else's lens, regardless who I'm talking to, what's going to resonate with them. And at the time, it was the workforce. We want to be the most innovative state. Well, you can't be innovative if you're not creative. That started getting attention. This is a creative workforce that's untapped, that solve problems. That started getting attention. By shifting the language away from we uplift and we build bridges and those things that we are accustomed to in the arts, and focusing more on the arts are problem solvers, that helped us generate $160 million from state government in 3.5 years during the pandemic, because we changed how we talked about the work that we do. I then thought, oh gosh, we're gonna run into a brick wall, because I can't go back in the door and say the same. The arts, you can't be innovative if you're not creative, if we can't prove it. So I set out to try to find a way to prove it. So what is impactful, and think about, I'm just gonna read a few statistics quickly of what we're finding, and this isn't just a one-time study and we're moving on. This isn't looking backward. This is today's information that these organizations will continue to gather, so we're able to report to city council, to the county, to corporate foundations that, for example, these are the Wexner Center stats, 77% of attendees reported reduced stress. Why is that important? That is a core indicator of mental wellness. 89% of participants said they didn't feel alone. Why is that important? That speaks directly to the loneliness epidemic. 85% left the WEX thinking differently. Why is that important? That means that the arts are building perspective shifting and critical thinking skills that employers say are in short supply. So what I wanted to do is set out and not talk to arts organizations about changing mission or program, but think about what outcomes are you doing? You aren't a museum. You are building confidence or inspiring wonder in K through 12 students. How do you do that? We do that through our gallery initiative. You're not a ballet. You are teaching self-agency and a way to carry yourself. How do you do that? You do that through dance. So I'm asking organizations to shift the way that they think about the work that they do. The art is the vehicle to get them to the real world human outcomes that we all need in this world. We are foundational for that. So for me, the data is important both as an independent organization to go out and say in their community to any stakeholder, this is direct proof of what our organization does. And then as an advocate collectively to talk about the sector, we then aggregate all the data. And now we can talk about not just economic impact and the billions of dollars that we put in the economy, because I say if that really mattered, the arts wouldn't be in the position that we're in right now. But if we can say collectively the arts can cure the absentee epidemic in schools, because we foster a sense of safety, self-worth, and value, which national studies show that kids are more likely to go to school if they feel safe, seen, and valued. Or if we can say that we can improve math scores, because we know we have proof that music programs and others improve test scores and we have the data, my dream is that any community issue that we face, the first phone call a governor, a city council member, a state leader, a corporate foundation picks up the phone and calls their museum, calls the orchestra, calls the performing arts to say, what do you have to come help us solve this issue?
I want to add that there are other countries that have thought of the arts as a way to eliminate problems. The country of Venezuela in 1975 created a program called El Sistema, if you're not aware of that organization. It's absolutely incredible. It was a youth orchestra, not established to play Brahms and Beethoven, but to fight poverty, gang participation, and to this day, they've served over a million students, and that is what the arts can do. And I appreciate Angela's work so much during the pandemic because none of us had a voice, and she became our voice during that time, which was so helpful. And I think this initiative allowed a collective of people to come together to learn a new language, right? A different way to talk about this. Again, we've asked everyone, are you left-handed and from Appalachia, right? I always joke that that's what is on our surveying, but have we really ever asked, this event inspired me to think in new and different ways? That's groundbreaking. I love this one. The event gave me a personal appreciation for the importance of future investments and local arts programs. Say it loud for the people in the back, right? So no, it's been great to have this level of surveying and to let that the results of that drive how we talk about it, most importantly, and then what we put on our stages and in our galleries.
I see art in everything. In everything. If I look at you, you're all pieces of art. And so I think that being able to communicate that the data that Angela and her and working with McConnell and all the other organizations is really important data. And I think that we take that data with other data that we already know, and I think you will be able to have a impactful story to tell in order to get arts funding. Because the things that Angela is sharing, these are things that we already know. But we weren't able to figure out a way to share that information. And then once you have the data, it's pretty easy to go in and share this information being very strategic in what information you share to be able to get the result that you want. And that result for most of you is funding. And so if I were to take the data and realize that the importance of dealing with mental health wellness, And I would be looking at nonprofit organizations that are partnering with organizations that would be helping whatever that nonprofit may be or that business is, that will be able to help provide the arts to be able to deal with the mental wellness, mental health wellness. So it's really being strategic. And if I was going to an elected official, I would think about what are they passionate about and take this data and be able to share, because you have to be strategic. So if I want to talk about workforce development and that I need to make sure that my workforce can work together, that they're going to be creative, I need creative thinkers to get to do the work, that I need to be able to have the data that we have already received, and I would share that with the person who's focused on workforce development. So it's being strategic with all the data, and you should get positive results. Now, we just stated, we're in tough times right now. So you do have to have more information to share the impact of what's going on, what we're hearing, and how it's going to be helpful to move our community forward.
Yeah, and I think that it's important to, Priscilla's right, it's to be strategic, and that's really was the approach. The approach number one was, can we develop a system where any organization, regardless of size or art discipline, can apply these assessments. It took me a while to kind of come around to say, you know, what are we doing and how are we asking? And by the way, this isn't a new phenomenon. I had the honor of having Dr. Wayne Lawson, if any of you know Dr. Wayne Lawson, I got a master class every month for probably the last 10 years on the public value of the arts. We must prove public value of the arts. Ohio was part of a 12 state art agency study with Wallace Foundation and Harvard in the early 2000s that looked at how do you measure public value. And that abstract identified that for decades, and this again is in 2004, I read this, was the abstract, I'm reading this in 2024. And the abstract said, for 30 years, we've been defining arts impact by ticket sales, number of audience members, number of artists we employ. Those are outputs. We need to start talking about arts impact in terms of public value. What changes? It's not how many came, what happens to the many that come? And so that was ingrained in me of why can't we figure that out? And then when you work with data scientists that say every other industry assesses and measure outcomes, validated, scientifically validated outcomes, I thought of my children when I'm taking them to their wellness check. And as they're entering teen years, the nurse hands them a clipboard to answer a set of questions. And I'm looking over and I see, oh, there are 5 questions and they pertain to loneliness and depression. That's an assessment. Those are scientifically validated assessments. We are now taking the same tools that healthcare, education, other workforce have used for decades and applying those assessment tools to arts and arts impact and performance. And so it's not a one-time shot. It's not Kim, as she's reading the questions that they're asking, what I loved and what was really pleasing to me was to see the collective appreciate that you were measuring the same way the WECS was measuring, the same way Toronto Arts Council was measuring, the same way Orlando Family Stage was measuring. Because now it's not apples and oranges, it's apples to apples, and it's the collective. That was the beauty that came out of that. So we spent a year, proof of concept. We've proven that we can measure the arts in scientifically validated ways. Now we have a governance issue. We have to get the sector to understand from funders on down, we need to ask different questions to prove impact so we can walk to stakeholders, donors, whomever, to say this is what the arts produce, this is how the arts are saving lives.
I just wanted to add to that. We have embarked on quite a few partnerships that we've started in the past few years but have continued, and my wonderful colleague Michelle Taverner is the champion of those, and we take artists to the YWCA downtown, Goodwill Art Studios, those that are being treated at Grace Haven, and again, the arts are not extra. They are essential. And it has been an amazing thing to have this collective language, like you said, that we are all talking about the same thing, because if we're fighting shoulder to shoulder for these dollars, that's not going to work. We know it doesn't work. We have to have a collective voice. So it's been incredible.
One last thing I'll add is, when I think about going into an elected official's office, I'm sure all of you, when you're going in and you're advocating for something and you get the blank stare, you kind of tell that they're glazed over and they're not really getting it. I've been there. I didn't want that anymore. I didn't want arts leaders, arts artists to ever go through that again. And so I kept saying, what language can we use? And so I thought, oh, everybody wants to know, what's my return on investment? What am I going to get if I give you this money? What am I getting in return? So now I call this is the return on art. And we can prove to you the return on investment. I don't call it funding. It's an investment, because we are saving lives. We are improving communities. We are strengthening workforces. It's not just a one-off. It's not a gimmick. Think of how much we hear about how corporations, industries are lacking critical thinking, collaboration, creativity skills. Notice how the last 30 years STEM has been more and more pushed. As STEM increased, creativity in the workplace declined. Now we have AI. We will lose jobs to AI. The jobs that we're going to lose are the mundane, you know, low-level things that can be quick, save time. You know what we're going to need in 5, 10, 15, 20 years? Critical thinkers, the humanism of the workforce. AI can't compete with that. The arts are in the perfect position now to lean in and embrace. You do something that no other sector industry does. You foster empathy, confidence, critical thinking, collaborative skills, communication skills, the sense of belonging, all together, all at once. And you can now cherry pick. You want to go cross-sector with a healthcare organization or a healthcare system, you want to cross sector with right? And that's what we wanted to set out with this data to show. We can't just be reliant on public funding, because that there will never be enough of that. But the beauty of this now strengthens that investment conversation, not only with the public sector, but with all industries.
I think it also, as with the public sector, it's going to be very important. And I just have to say that in this community, we really have been blessed to have the Greater Columbus Arts Council, who has funded so many organizations and have gotten, you know, with working with the local government and the county government, that they put so much more money in the arts. And now, of course, we're in a time where that we know that we need, based upon the changes that has happened, that we need more money for the human service sector. But the arts in our community has played a significant role, and we understanding that the role that the arts plays, as I mentioned before, in terms of tourism, but through those tourism dollars, you're able to support the nonprofit organizations within our community. And so that's very important. But I'm also gonna mention that, as Angela said, I think this is very important just for businesses.
You're listening to the Columbus Metropolitan Club's weekly forum on 90.5 WCBE. This week, it's all about the arts. The arts aren't just inspiring, they're infrastructure. New shared data from Central Ohio's cultural sector shows how creativity fuels workforce readiness, economic growth, and creates more vibrant communities. This week, we hear how investing in the arts is a force for transforming communities. We're hearing from Dr. Kimberly Goodman with the McConnell Arts Center, Angela Maleka with Maleka Creative Advisors, and former Columbus City Council member Priscilla R. Tyson. Your host is Sherry Chaney Jones with Sure Impact. We'll get back to this week's Columbus Metro Club Forum, Creative Capital, How the Arts Fuel Community Infrastructure, after a short break.
WCBE brings you over 100 performances every year live from Studio A. For more information and to see upcoming Studio A performances, check out our website at wcbe.org. Live from Studio A is supported by the Greater Columbus Arts Council and 90.5 WCBE, where live music matters.
Hi there, this is Morgan James. Every album represents a step in an artist's journey. Hello, music lovers. I'm inviting you to listen to Music Journeys with Mike Foley, Mike mixes music and conversation with artists to share what informed and inspired their latest project, how the love of music began, what music means to them, and so much more. We've chatted about three of my projects, the most recent being Soul Remains the Same, a soul album of songs you would never expect. You can always expect the perfect combination of music and stories on Music Journeys. The show airs Saturday afternoons at 3:30 on WCBE. Recent episodes are available on the major podcast platforms and the WCBE app. To meet and hear more from all the musicians featured since its start in 2018, including me, to be the first to be featured three times on the show, look for Music Journeys on WCBE's podcast experience at WCBE.org.
Do you love amazing stories? I know I do. I'm Michael Kent, and every week on my show, we examine something from history that's so unbelievable it sounds made up, but is 100% verifiably true. It's a podcast called The Internet Says It's True, and there are hundreds of episodes to choose from. For example, did you know the story of how Leonard Nimoy came up with Live Long and Prosper for Star Trek? Or how Columbia is dealing with a hippo problem that goes back directly to Pablo Escobar? Or one of my favorite stories, a man figured out that a nondescript Winnebago being auctioned online was actually an important part of space exploration history. These are all stories from The Internet Says It's True. Listening to a podcast has never been easier. You can listen through any popular podcast app, through the NPR app, or download the fantastic new WCBE app, click the Podcasts tab, and look for The Internet Says It's True with Michael Kent. You'll have so many stories up your sleeve, you'll feel like the smartest person in the room, especially if you're home alone.
Welcome back to the Columbus Metropolitan Club's weekly forum on 90.5 WCBE. This week, it's all about the arts. The arts aren't just inspiring, they're infrastructure. New shared data from Central Ohio's cultural sector shows how creativity fuels workforce readiness, economic growth, and creates more vibrant communities. This week, we're hearing how investing in the arts can be a force for transforming communities. We're hearing from Dr. Kimberly Goodman, Executive Director of Worthington's McConnell Arts Center, Angela Maleka, Chief Advocate Officer with Maleka Creative Advisors, and Priscilla R. Tyson, former Columbus City Council member and founder of Priscilla Tyson Consulting. She's also the namesake of the Priscilla Tyson Cultural Arts Center in downtown Columbus. Your host is Sherry Chaney Jones, co-founder and CEO of Sure Impact. Let's get back to this week's Columbus Metro Club Forum, Creative Capital, How the Arts Power Community Infrastructure.
How do you partner with businesses to be able to, if you're looking to get different funding, how do you work with businesses to be able to provide the skills that they need from their workforce? And so if I were going to, let's see, if I had a relationship with an organization and they were saying to me, we need to be able, because of the pandemic, people are used to staying at home, people have been isolated. What can your organization do to help change that? And one way I would think about would be to speak to them, show this data, but also how do you get your employees engaged in the arts? Maybe my organization can come in, we could do a pilot, and we could come into the organization and we do something, you know, at lunchtime or, you know, helping your employees. Or it may be that if you were to say to your employees, I want you to participate in the arts, you choose which one you want, but you need to go and be a part of the arts, because they're gonna, if you go to a play, go to a concert, go do these things, because what's gonna happen, that if there's a lack of loneliness, you're not gonna be lonely when you go to any of those events. You're gonna see different people, you're gonna look at them creatively. So I think that it's thinking outside the box of how you take this data and be able to share it with companies so that they can say, yes, you're helping to solve an issue. Because lots of times the arts does solve problems. It just does.
One other governance report comment too is, as I'm listening to you talk as well, is I hear a lot from organizations that we can't compete with the Cleveland Orchestra. We can't compete with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. We can't compete with Kappa if you're a smaller entity, because we have been accustomed to, and we have set the design that we look at what's your budget size. Oh, budget size equals impact because you must be reaching more people. But I work with the veterans. I was working with Central Ohio Veterans. They can't work in the masses. They have 5 veterans in an arts program that is saving lives, suicide prevention. We do art therapy. This way of assessing and looking at arts, human outcomes, evens the playing field, because again, it's not how many, it's what happens to the many. So we can deal with the max numbers of attendance. We can also deal with an audience of, you know, an organization that brings in 700,000 people a year. It doesn't matter, but we need to even the playing field, because not all issues are designed to be solved in the masses. And so this helps those organizations that are doing critical work at the very basis of mental wellness be able to come and have a seat at the table to say our impact is just as profound as any organization.
At the core of what I'm hearing everyone talk about is, yes, storytelling, and how do we show that we are creating different value than just the economic impact or ticket sales. But at the core of this is then having the data. And my team at Measurement Resources has had a front row seat for the past 20 years trying to help nonprofits, art organizations use data, collect data. And let's be honest, it seems very overwhelming to them. So if data is so important for these arts organizations and to use a different set of measurement tools and assessments, from all of you, what's the most doable first step that they can take so they're measuring the right things?
Start small and start easy. It could be 5 questions on a piece of paper that someone collects at the end. It doesn't have to be fancy. It doesn't have to be elaborate. We use a little incentive of you'll be in a drawing to win some tickets if you fill out the survey, and that works really, really well. But the one-liners of impact that we get back, we use all the time. A woman told us that, she said, "You all make life worth living." I cried a lot after that. It was so sweet. But that's the way to start. Start small, and then you can ramp it up for sure. You'll get the information that you're looking for.
I mean, one of my sayings is say no to the status quo. If the story you keep telling isn't getting you results, it's time to change your story. That's where this work was born out of. We weren't getting the results from the same economic impact story that we had been telling for decades. And so it really was, it may seem overwhelming, but what you're doing isn't getting you the results you need. It's not requiring you to change programming. It's not requiring you to change mission. It's just requiring you to approach this from a different lens, shift your paradigm, and I've been told, again, countlessly that organizations have said, we can't put on a grant that we save lives. You can't say that because we can't prove it. So we just go to the attendance numbers. Well, we can prove it now. And these are validated, scientifically validated questions and assessments that are proving that you can say, yes, you save lives. So I think that that might be a way to make an organization kind of sit up and take notice and lean in and want to start small, start with one area of impact and do it really well and go from there. But that's also kind of the package of this return on art, which is it's not just the assessment. It then is, okay, what do we do with the data now that we have it? And that's where the work really starts, and we can apply that to see results.
So I'm getting the nod from Doug that, thank you everyone. It's CMC's longstanding tradition to take audience questions. So we will move to questions from our live stream and in audience in just a few minutes. So thank you, panelists. So if you have a question for our panelists, now is the time to head to the microphone. For those who are joining on YouTube, just drop your question in the chat and we'll keep an eye on them. But before we turn it over to the audience, I have one more question, but we do want to hear those audience questions. But this is the big, bold question. So what bold cross-sector move could Central Ohio take in the next 5 years to become a national model for arts-driven community transformation?
I would say that every nonprofit make it part of their mission, vision, and values to focus on this work and to continue to tell the story of the saving lives aspect. Like Angela said, it feels, ooh, can we say that? We're not doing addiction services. We're not doing food services. We're not helping homelessness. But aren't we, though? Right? Aren't we, with all of these things that we're measuring, we are changing lives and we are saving lives. So I would love to see every nonprofit figure out ways that they can partner with others. And I think that would really change things.
I think that having this information, hopefully those of you who are sitting in this audience and are watching this program, that you now feel differently about this information and what story you want to tell. And I agree, you do start small, and then you have your audience answer these questions and how they're really helping to solve a community issue. How many in here work with young people in your organizations? And if you're working with young people, and this is going to be really important because, of course, they're our future, but as you see that there's always things to be, I'll say this, especially in the summer, dollars to support organizations that work with our children, because we want to make sure our children are in safe spaces. We want to make sure that it's part of overall violence prevention within this community. And so I would, one, start thinking about using this information, absolutely using this data, in your program, ask those three or four questions that's going to help you to move forward. And the last thing I'll just say is, what can we do? Is this is such an important study. It is a game changer. And if you use this data, you will certainly begin to have different outcomes to share that will help you in terms of not only helping to save the lives and help young people, but also to bring dollars into your organization.
Lead with outcomes and end with art. Art will always be made. Arts and artists and organizations are the most resilient individuals that I've worked with. And no matter how many cuts that happen, I always hear, we're still gonna make the artwork. What fascinated me with artists is that innate ability every day they've gotta create, we're gonna create, because that's what's in them. Lead with outcomes. Art will always happen. Art is the vehicle for producing those human outcomes in everyone.
Now we're excited to hear from all of you. Doug Buchanan from CMC is curating questions from our live stream audience and from those here in the room. So please feel free to join. Doug, at the microphone, what's our first question?
Sherry, thank you very much. And thank you so much to today's panelists. If you do have a question for today's panelists, please do join me here at the microphone. I know this person's going to have a good question. If you're watching online, please type your question into the chat. We'll try to get to as many of those as we can. Great questions at CMC always have two things in common. They can be asked in just a sentence or two. And what punctuation mark does a question always end with? They end with question marks. Yes, they do. I'm going to launch us off with this one. Can this data help position the arts as essential civic infrastructure worthy of private equity investment?
I would say yes. It's a very good question. Again, my whole focus is a return on investment, in that we are investing in saving lives, improving job workforce readiness, any aspect of humanity or the humanness that we need to be productive, regardless what industry that you're in. So yes, it's a tremendous return on investment.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Stephanie Matthews, Executive Director of A Tribe for Jazz. And it's a question, but it's actually kind of more of an observation for whomever feels free to answer. The work that you've done, Angela, it's in all of you, is just truly dynamic, right? And we know it's gonna be transformative and impactful, but it also feels early. And when I say early, here's what I mean. We as organizations, by using this work in our storytelling, are actually planting seeds within the community, because corporations don't always value human value. So when you come in with conversations and stories, using this data, it still seems like there's going to be that range of that time where at this we start to get maximum momentum. Do you understand what I'm saying? Maximum impact, we're gonna have to build to it. But I love where we are right now and that we're having these conversations. But I'm wondering if that feels like a thought, that's still the road ahead of us too.
This resonates
resonates with me very much as a fundraiser and a development person. How many fundraisers are in the room? I know there are quite a few, right? It's slow, steady work, right, Stephanie? So I know that this work is ahead of us, and this may be the infancy, unfortunately, because my language hasn't changed until, and maybe even a week ago when we met with Angela, I even mentioned economic impact. I said, oh, darn it, I'm still using the old language. So it does take a while. It's like moving a cruise ship, right? It's very slow and steady. But if we're united, we can be very successful.
We needed to prove a concept. That was the whole idea. It was, I can't go back in and say the arts, you have to be creative to be innovative. I had to be able to prove it. So I set out to find a way, can we prove that? So the last 18 months was designed to prove a concept. And in 6 months, we got numbers in that are proving it, to where I'm having organizations say, we are now changing the way we view our own programming because of the numbers that we're getting. What I also am learning is I have executive directors who've participated, who see this data, who say yes, but then say, yeah, our boards are saying we're not in the work of empathy building. We're not in the, we measure 21st century learning skills. That's not what we do. We're a ballet. That's a little maddening to me. We have a really big systematic shift that needs to happen. I call it the renaissance of relevance. When I think about at the bare bones, if the arts were viewed as relevant, resources and revenue would follow. This is all about building a renaissance of arts relevance. We are more relevant today than ever. And so it takes more than one, it takes all to do that. And I'm fortunate now to be in Chattanooga and Alabama and now in Florida working with organizations that are seeing that. We're not alone here. This is universal. I've had people from the UK reach out. So it will take a renaissance. This is the beginning. I realized after the pilot, the results came in, I said to my husband, oh gosh, now my work has really started. You know.
And I'd like to add to that. This is a pilot, and it's a pilot that has significant results. And now more people have to have this information from the pilot. You have, you know, this is part of it, is educating individuals about the work that Angela's team has done. And then it will be continuing to educate. So I would just say that I would definitely begin to think about organizations that collectively have people and for this information to be shared. It should be shared with GCAC. It should be shared with the Human Service Chamber. It should be shared with the Chamber of Commerce here. It has to be shared for people to get it. And then, because that's how I believe we're going to be able to see change within our community.
Thank you all for your time. Cyrus Richardson here with 12 Stones Productions. My question is, what city in America do you think that we can emulate after that is supporting the arts or something that we need to, you know, model after to try to be better then?
I know that the state of Minnesota had incredible record-breaking granting through government funding, and I don't know the specifics of it, but they have done a phenomenal job in the state of Minnesota of funding the arts. So that is one place I always look and see what they're doing, what they've done.
I haven't come across another entity or approach like what the collective had approached the last year. And I'm so grateful for the organizations to participate, to be willing to do this work, because without them, we wouldn't have been able to prove that we can measure these outcomes. And so this is new. This is not something that another city is emulating, although I will say Chattanooga is slowly but quickly evolving this into their DNA, because they don't have dedicated funding for the arts from the city or county of Chattanooga. And so they're very much looking to how do we get a 1% of the bed tax for the arts, and to see that now it's a human service solution and a provider, they're really embracing that. So it's very much on the cusp and is new territory.
Good afternoon. My name is Kimberly Danielle, and I'm representing Kia Arts. And one of the things I'm really curious about, first of all, thank you so much for this conversation. The data is juicy. I'm very interested. But what I'm really thinking about and what I'm sitting still with are the forgotten zip codes, the forgotten neighborhoods, the human beings that are in areas that will never have exposure to some of the organizations that are sitting here, whose lives also need to be saved. And who we're missing. And those organizations that could potentially serve them, they're not going to those places because they've been forgotten for a long time. And so I'm wondering about what it looks like for leaders in the room, for us, like, what does that look like for us to figure out how to get back to the places that, for with voices we haven't heard or we've never asked them these questions, and who may have stories who are not believing their stories have value to turn into data points to be able to expand whose lives get to get saved?
That's a wonderful question. And last year we did a project with an organization called the Returning Artists Guild. And those are folks that are either currently or formerly incarcerated. That was incredibly meaningful work. And one of the most meaningful moments for me is when the chief of police in Worthington, where the McConnell Arts Center is, walked through. He was incredibly touched by that. And you can imagine all of the complicated feelings with those two entities kind of coming together. But what we found at the MAC is we have to go to people. We can't sit in Worthington and think that people can come. How are they going to get there? So we have been trying very hard to figure out who's not here, because now we're starting to know who is here, who is not here. We need to go to them. So that's one of the ways.
And I love what Kimberly said about knowing who is not here. That's something at the core of the shared measurement, was to look at not only what was done and how well it was done and how people are better off, but who was receiving those benefits. And so now this collaborative has gaps in, you know, oh, these zip codes aren't represented, or these voices aren't represented. So that data is also very powerful. Back to Priscilla's point about, you do need to talk about who you're serving and showing who may be left out of these services. So that's another really powerful thing that this type of collaborative data collection can bring to light.
I want to say, and I have to add to this point, that absolutely, I feel like we need to hear everyone's voices, and there certainly are. And you yourself have certainly been engaged in dealing and working with diverse populations. This is really important that we do have everyone's voices. And so if you are, I believe that this information can be shared with groups of people, as I mentioned earlier, that are working with our children. There are people who are absolutely working with our children and in diverse communities from various zip codes, that they certainly can, that the individuals who are leading those programs are amazing, because I know a lot of them, and that we should be able to get data from them so that their thoughts are, so that the individuals who are coming to programs that are being led by diverse leaders that touch diverse people, that we have data that will support why this is so important for them. And that isn't hard to do. It's just having the right people in the room that's figuring out who should be that need to learn this data. So I think we have to be very strategic. I'm going back to this, as to who has the opportunity to work with Angela and to be able to get more information that will be important not only to the individuals who are able to participate in the programming, but also to the organizations that are providing it.
I had a phone call or a meeting yesterday, actually, with somebody with an adolescent mental health agency who has within that an arts studio. And she said, we're on the verge of being cut because everybody's down in funding. But when the SNAP crisis was happening, she said, I had so many people come in that I just needed to get a brush or a marker or a crayon in their hand, because they were the anxiety was paralyzing about food insecurity, that through that enabled them to be able to walk out of their doors that day. And so she said, how can we use this to even communicate within our own social good entity that the creative arts programs that are within them aren't getting cut because they're viewed as, well, that's art and we have bigger problems to solve. So it is beginning to grow, but as Priscilla said, it needs to be strategic, but it's a grassroots. To have a renaissance, it needs to be everybody together. And so that's one of the reasons why I'm here is to share the work that we've been doing and to know that it's not an entity. It's going to take all of us from all zip codes.
Well, everyone, I wish we had more time, but I'm getting the signal from Doug. It is time to wrap it up. So let's turn things over to Sophia for closing remarks.
You've been listening to the Columbus Metropolitan Club's weekly forum on 90.5 WCBE. This week, we explored how arts organizations strengthen the backbone of Central Ohio, boosting local economies, shaping community identity, and driving civic impact. We heard why creativity isn't a luxury. It's a strategic investment in Central Ohio's future. We're grateful to this week's panelists, Dr. Kimberly Goodman, Executive Director of Worthington's McConnell Arts Center, Angela Maleka, Chief Advocate Officer with Maleka Creative Advisors, and Priscilla R. Tyson, former Columbus City Council member and founder of Priscilla Tyson Consulting. Your host was Sherry Cheney Jones, co-founder and CEO of Sure Impact. The presenting sponsor of our live stream was the Center for Human Kindness at the Columbus Foundation. Our live stream partner was the Columbus Dispatch. This forum was also supported by Downtown Columbus Incorporated and by the National Veterans Memorial and Museum. If you're ready to keep exploring this week's forum topic, our friends at the Columbus Metropolitan Library recommend reading Run It Like a Business, Strategies for Arts Organizations by Aubrey Bergauer. Join us next week as the not-for-profit Columbus Metropolitan Club once again connects people and ideas through community conversations. I'm Doug Buchanan with CMC. Thanks for listening.